You're listening to the podcast with a K, available on iTunes, Stitcher.com, Audio Boom, and thepodcast.co.uk. And if you're listening, I'm so sorry. Or, you know, leave a review or something. Thanks!
Welcome to the podcast with a K, podcasterites. We are unaffiliated with any website other than www.thepodcast.co.uk. With us this week, or with myself this week, is James McLean, almost as ever, and our fourth podcaster, like a fifth Beatle, it's Gareth Kavanagh. Afternoon, chaps.
Welcome, welcome.
Or is he like RC in the fourth season of Knight Rider? That urban, unwanted type who ruined the show.
Oh, that's a bit niche. That's a bit niche.
No, I don't think I've seen that series.
You're not.
We'll never get that.
I know, but it's one of those hidden disgraces that people just don't know, don't seem to remember. I mean, they remember Super Pursuit Mode and RC, which of course is funny for English people because it sounds like RC. RC was the urban hood guy who joined the team at the same time, same series. Everyone remembers the car having its new transformation. No one remembers the minority character horribly stereotyped and inserted into the show, which died that year. Which is I was alluding Gareth Kavanagh is.
The harbinger of doom for your esteemed new spin-off podcast. So, yeah, thank you for that.
It's okay.
I was just thinking that I've turned up, you know, at a very eventful week. You know, here was me thinking we were going to talk about all things season 17 and lovely, lovely things like that. But no, the whole world has turned upside down. I feel like Lieutenant Mercer, who's just turned up on the space station to give Davos a dusting and the Daleks attack and snatch him. So it's just one of those weeks, really.
Maybe you're more like Seven of Nine, who comes along and gives this whole podcast a breath of fresh sexual air after dwindling ratings. So, I mean, I'm just trying to be a devil's advocate. You don't have to be rubbish. You might be something quite cool, although there'll be a few people who think you're rubbish anyway, because that's how fandom works.
Oh, well, listen, you know, what can I say? I used to, you know, I mean, I usually fill in when you're off you know, reading books and stuff. So I like to think of myself as Sergeant Bentman of the podcast. Making tea, making observation, you know, invaluable, but you can go a week without him.
Indeed.
That's very self-effacing. That's very sweet.
Yeah, actually, our ratings haven't been so good the last few weeks. I think that's mainly because of Christmas and no Doctor Who online. No Doctor Who on air, I beg your pardon. But, you know, we happen. Peaks and troughs. Listen.
You mean you haven't used the magic word Stephen Moffat or missing episodes?
Well, that's probably why. Well, that's about to end, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, anyone who's
going to be missing episodes and Stephen Moffat for next year. You'll be able to put that in your title.
So, this week's podcast title, 2016, the departure of Stephen Moffat means missing episodes.
Yeah.
Oh, ratings gold.
So, dear listener.
You hashtag that with David Tennant is actually gay or something like that, then the ratings would probably just explode through the roof, as with the death threats.
Yes, indeed, yes.
Yeah.
And the solicitor's
letters. He's not, as far as I'm aware.
And the solicitor's letters.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Ah, and I wouldn't say such a thing anyway, because he always seems like a very nice chap. Hi, David. And on to one of our other listeners, Stephen Moffat, who has finally announced, although earlier than we were anticipating, that he is stepping down as showrunner of Doctor Who. It all feels to me... there's also the announcement that Chris Chibnall will be the next Doctor Who showrunner. And there's been a bit of a fan depression over that in some areas, which I think is slightly unfair. And we'll come on to that shortly.
A fantrum.
It's a like fantrum.
It's a fan tantrum.
Perfect. Yeah. Fantrum. But it's been a bit
anti-climactic.
Yeah. Right here. But yeah. from James. It does seem to be slightly anticlimactic compared to the last time this happened, doesn't it? It's not like last time everyone was going, oh, Russell T. Davies is going, but hey, Stephen Moffat's coming in. This time it's Stephen Moffat's going.
What do we expect? Do we expect it to tumble out of a blue box, be wreathed in energy, and then turn into Chris Chibnall?
Yeah, I think that's what they do. Colours,
his kidneys are a different colour. Yeah. I think they should.
And his hair. And his hair.
Yes.
For he is ginger.
Is Chibnall ginger?
Yeah.
Oh, get your money on Sam Troughton as the next stop immediately. Do not remember where you heard it first, or rather second, because I lost the stack on the last one, having convinced myself that everything was pointing to Sam Troughton as the next doctor, to the point where I moved the betting in from 28 to 1 to 2 to 1 on, and I could feel the panic on the betting exchanges. Oh. And I even got told by Pete Ware when they were at the Do, and they were checking the Twitter, and all of a sudden Sam Troughton came in. They went, "Are you sure it's Capaldi?" And they went, "Let's have a look at Sam Troughton. Christ, we're going to have to do this. We're going to have to do a new cover." But no, apart from that momentary thrill, that was a very expensive cheap thrill. But it could be Sam Troughton again.
I remember several phone calls with you that weekend.
Yes. I remember when they unveiled him, Ali G style. I looked at it. Everyone was happy, and I looked at it, and I went, "Oh, that's a very old-looking hand. Oh dear, oh dear." So yes, very disappointing.
Okay, before we proceed, James, are you recording?
Not that I've let that temper my enjoyment of Capaldi. It's been very good.
Am I holding you off long enough while I check?
Yeah.
It says it's recording.
Right, okay, cool. Might need it. Mine's saying recording paused again. And recording on at the same time, so whatever. Just in case. Ooh. So, little edit there, Christian. Note to self. Okay, so, Charlotte Moore is the BBC One controller these days. She says, "I have decided to schedule Stephen's big finale series in spring 2017 to bring the nation together for what will be a huge event on the channel. 2016 is spoilt with national moments, including the Euros and Olympics, and I want to hold something big back for 2017. I promise it will be worth the wait."
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because if she had the last season of Moffat this year, that would mean it'd be the last season probably of Capaldi, which would mean her 2017 would be a brand new Doctor. And that'd be very exciting for an event year, wouldn't it?
That would be a big event year, wouldn't it?
But yeah. No, actually, it would be a bigger event year if we had the last season of a Doctor, and the new Doctor would be the year after.
Hello?
Hello? Gareth, can you hear us?
Hello, yes, I drifted off into the ether there. Right.
Okay, you saw that. Yeah, well, I was just quoting Charlotte Moore, and...
I heard that.
Okay.
I mean, load of piffle. Because, of course, let's face it, you know, all of those football audiences are exactly the Doctor Who audience, aren't they? You know, you're going to weigh it up. Shall I watch Slovakia versus England, or shall I watch new Doctor Who? Ooh, you know, Doctor Who magazine will be full of commentary on the Euros. Hmm. Very, very strange. Very strange. I'd rather they were honest and just said it isn't going to be ready in time. And
we're doing Sherlock instead.
We're doing Sherlock instead, and we can manage Christmas. And don't worry, it's not that long anyway. Enjoy the Blu-rays, chaps.
Yeah, it's been amazing. They spun it in a similar way last time, really, I seem to recall. And, of course, Chris Chibnall, who will be the new Doctor Who showrunner, he's busy at the moment working on Series 3 of Broadchurch, which has either just started filming or is about to start filming with David Tennant, Olivia Colman, and all those other people who have been involved in the previous seasons. Not really sure how they're carrying it on to a third series, to be honest with you. He has said...
I think that works for him, though, doesn't it? It works. I mean, if we assume Capaldi goes at the end of 2017, at the end of that one, if we assume that, I think it's a fair assumption, and if they're doing all the production this year, and if we assume that Chibnall's first episode is Christmas 2017, which is a fair assumption, then he's got a year to get everything together. It's not a bad idea. And actually, although I think Charlotte's passing is a bit rubbish, if you're going to not have anything on the telly and it sticks in its sort of September-ish, you know, we're used to having it that time of year, why not have 2016 off when we've got thousands of hours of the Olympics and hundreds of hours of football and, you know, and a bit of Sherlock. Why not? I suppose it kind of fits. It's a crap excuse, but I can.
Yeah, I think because they've left it to this sort of date to announce it, haven't they? There's clearly been a lot of stuff going on in the background. We've had all sorts of names mentioned to us from various different sources as to who's going to be taken over. One of the names that was never mentioned, however, is Mark Gatiss. So that's interesting. Or if it was,
but it was on Facebook
a very long time ago.
Every fan. I think Mark Gatiss should be the next showrunner. Most threads.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one. But I think you're being sarcastic. I'm just going to jump down into what Chris Chibnall said, and he said, "What did he say? I've lost Chris Chibnall. What did he say?" And here we go. Doctor Who is the ultimate BBC programme, bold, unique, vastly entertaining, and adored all around the world. So it's a privilege and a joy to be the next curator of this funny, scary, and emotional family drama. I've loved Doctor Who since I was 4 years old, and I'm relishing the thought of working with the exceptional team at BBC Wales to create new characters, creatures, and worlds for the Doctor to explore. Stevens achieved the impossible by continually expanding Doctor Who's creative ambition while growing its global popularity.
And reducing its national popularity. Sorry, carry on.
He's been a dazzling and daring showrunner, and hearing his plans and stories for 2017, it's clear he'll be going out with a bang, just to make my life difficult. I'm interested, because it seems to me as though, based on what we know so far, and, you know, it is little and things can change a lot in the next 18 months or, you know, in 6 or 7 months' time when they're probably going to start entering the early stages of mounting this new Doctor Who production, which obviously there's going to be some Doctor on TV while Doctor Who's being filmed, which doesn't happen often. There might even be periods where there's two lots of Doctor Who being filmed. But back to what my original point was, it seems to me that they are carrying on with the showrunner model.
Yeah.
Which has glaring weaknesses, which surely after 11, 12 years, as it'll be by then, should have been really picked up.
Yeah, but there's no definition of how you do it on a showrunner basis. There are showrunners who are basically there locked away in their garret and just issue scripts and rewrite things. And then there's showrunners who are more collaborative. There are showrunners that have more production-minded producers with them. There are showrunners who would have people behind them from a very strong scripting background. I think it's a bit of a red herring. I think, from what I can see, Russell did it very different to Stephen Moffat. And Stephen Moffat, you know, and Chibnall will do it very differently.
I think the point, though, is that, I mean, a showrunner is something that's migrated from America. It's an American model, which isn't really used in the UK in the way that it's used in America, bar from the way that it is publicly used to define that production hierarchy in the media. How Russell T. Davis to how Stephen Moffat operated is never identified. They're just given that label to sort of give them that sort of, I suppose, that value, isn't it? It gives them that sort of cultural value.
Yeah, I mean, Russell's been fairly clear about how he did it and why he insisted on it, which is that he had been an executive producer in the things that he'd written for some time, and that's the way he produces it. I also know from chatting to people like Graham Harper how incredibly involved Russell is at every stage. He'll sit there, you know, in the editing suite, and he's there selecting his rushes, his takes. He's incredibly involved, and that's from his executive producer background. So really, it's just putting a writer in the executive producer, and it allows him to have the final say on the look and feel of the production. Now, he, I think, used that power very, very potently. Whether other people have done, I don't know.
Yeah, I think my main concern is, I think, and I've, there's no disagreement over Russell T. Davies and how he did it, and I think it was absolutely right that he did make that, emphasise that was the choice he was making and why he was doing it. Yeah, I think forward is...
Are we allowed
to
swear on this? Are we allowed to swear on this?
If you do, I'll just stick canine over it. So.
Stick canine over it. His great quote, which I was there when he said it, and he's right, and he said, but at the end of the day, I had to be the showrunner with that power, because on something like Midnight, he said, I've got a great cast, I've got a great script. He said, the minute someone puts Sky in a stupid hat, he goes, you fucked it up.
Yeah, yeah.
Because all that hard work goes down the pan because someone makes a crap decision and there's no one in charge to say, no, the hat's got to go.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. And I think that's only one side of it. And I think for me, one of the problems with having the showrunner is that over the past 3 or 4 years, there's probably only been 2 standout episodes by Stephen Moffat.
You mean written by
himself?
Say again?
Written by Stephen Moffat.
Written by Stephen Moffat, yeah. And I think that there needs to...
I doubt we'd agree which ones they are either. Go on.
Well, I was being generous, and so my first one was Heaven Sent, and the other one was the 50th anniversary.
I'm with you on Heaven Sent. Okay. Yeah, I think I'm with you on Heaven Sent.
Okay. So, but the point is it really... The position of, should it be going forward, should the position of the showrunner be a guy who's writing, or should the position of the showrunner be a guy to run the show, which includes heavy rewriting, heavy storylining, heavy rewriting, and giving all of the scripts to other writers? That's my question.
I think what you're getting there is nostalgic for the Hinchcliffe model.
No, I don't think I am.
I can see the only things that are made like that now are things like EastEnders.
Well, EastEnders is doing all right at the moment, though, isn't it? So that's not a bad thing to
down.
Copy.
I mean, but you got Dominic. Is it Dominic Treadwell Collins? Is it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
He's very well thought of, and he's not a writer; he's a production guy.
Yeah,
he's a soap. But the needs of they're churning out whatever 2.5 hours, 2 hours of drama a week. You know, we're talking about 11.5 hours of drama a year, or possibly 18 months, depending on how you measure
it. Yeah, but I mean, look at Game of Thrones, right? Okay, so that's largely storylined already. How many episodes did Benioff and Weiss write? Very few.
Yeah, not many.
Very few. And I think, it seems to me, and it might be just the same, and it might be just the impact of the stories or whatever, and their impact on Doctor Who's ongoing narrative. And this is the moment where Brian comes in and makes a reference to the story of the Doctor taking the TARDIS, leaving Gallifrey being altered twice.
Oh, good luck on that.
But my point is that, is it not a better idea to have a guy who's in charge of just looking after everything rather than, and I personally think that Stephen Moffat has spread himself too thinly. The guy's got 2 shows, he's got a family, a lot of travelling, because he didn't take the decision to move to Wales, did he? He stayed in London. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so he's taken a completely different approach to it that Russell T. Davies did.
It is different, and I think the but then you had producers, people like Piers and Beth, who and Brian, who have a much stronger, more solid production basis. So as far as I can see, they're running the production side. The Moff is running the story side,
but is
overseeing and signing off.
But this is the other problem, is that he is not just simply running the story side. He is positioned by the BBC as well. And this is what I mean about the showrunner model, as being the chief, being almost like the singular entity of Doctor Who. And as I say, this is where I don't think it's down to what Russell was doing. I understand what Russell was doing, but how the BBC decided to model it. And from what I've heard, they actually like to try and keep the showrunner model. They like that, given that you don't really get many other UK shows which actually use the showrunner model in the way that it's promoted. You don't have that sort of creator, producer, runner sort of thing as so heavily indicated as with Sherlock and Doctor Who, which is possibly also because it sells it to the American market that way. But he is given that sort of almost omnipotence. Publicly, he is almost considered. No one seems to think. I mean, there was someone on our on the Facebook for Podcast with a K who was sort of saying, "Oh, you know, maybe Chibnall will want to try and keep Capaldi on." It's not just up to Chibnall. There's a lot of people who get involved in casting processes, but the way that it's structured and promoted as showrunner sort of suggests that one person becomes the ultimate say on a TV show, while other shows, it, you know, it's a little less dogmatic, less of a hierarchy. And I think that is a bit of a problem, especially when you get someone who is a fan. And maybe they start to sort of, I think the difference between Davis being producer, showrunner, and Stephen Moffat, and this is a very glib thing to say, and if either of them listening, I do apologise, it's just how it seems.
Hi, Stephen.
Is that, that Russell seemed to be producing, showrunning the new show that he'd, that on that Doctor Who was a reboot almost. I know it wasn't, but it was, he was rebooting the franchise. He was making it viable.
It was a reboot.
And that's what he was dealing with. With Moffat, it feels like he feels that he is the bastion of the entire run, if that sort of makes sense, that his role is custodian for the entire history of the show, which gives him greater, it extends his remit as a writer, which possibly, but it also extends his relevance and his guardianship and the way the guardianship is shaped by his belief. While with Davis, it felt a little more like a production. This was his production. This is what he was doing. Yes, they would take from the old show occasionally, but basically, he was showrunner of new Doctor Who, not showrunner of Doctor Who. And I wonder if that was a slight difference in the perceptions. I don't know.
I don't think you're wrong there. I think that they have very different styles, which means that, and you know, bringing this full circle, I'd expect Chris Chibnall to have a different style, a new team, you know, to refresh, to bring in different things. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the showrunner role is as defined as you think. I can understand why it works for the BBC in a way, because they've got one person to deal with and one person to talk to. And that's useful. And if you assume that what you're trying to create is something which has lots and lots of links to the past and is a bit harder to write than, let's say, you know, a crime show or EastEnders, where you've got the underpinning of lots of characters and lots of history and lots of nothing happening for weeks, and then you just plan your 3-month character arcs. Doctor Who is a little bit more ambitious and different to that. And I think there's also a sense that the BBC don't necessarily have the people in their organisation who can just seamlessly move into that. Maybe that's wrong. I don't know, but maybe it'd be interesting to see what would happen if suddenly they'd said, right, you know, we're moving in an executive producer to look after this who's just done 6 years on EastEnders. I suspect that the fans would hate that more than anything.
But the fans don't really understand in the first place. I don't mean that in a rude way, but I mean it's an industry.
Our discussion here and how I've seen certain sections of fandom react with utter horror this week, plus an obsession that's been going on for years with the ratings, has made me realise that Doctor Who fans are now football fans in all but name. Hmm. You know, the showrunner is the manager. Like a football club manager, he gets to bring in his personnel, he gets to oversee training, he's the man who's the lightning conductor if it goes wrong, he's the man who lifts the cup and gets the plaudit if it goes right. Yes, he has a chairman and a board above him, and there's other things out of his control. But, you know, and if you sat down and invented how to run a successful football club from scratch, I don't think you'd do it that way. You wouldn't have one person in the crucible with all the glory and the pressure, but that's how it is. And in the same token, the fans now just, you know, quite often they don't just sit there and think, well, I do now. I'll watch it once and think, oh, that was all right, or not so sure, or that could have been better, or well, that's all right. There's people out there that instantly go on, they're looking for the ratings, they're looking then for the overnight, they're looking then to compare it to previous years, they're looking then to say, oh, it's about the same, or oh, it's down, but the whole the industry's down. It's become almost not about what it is. And I think that, I think Doctor Who has become football, and I don't think it's for the better.
And of course, the fans dress up as the people they're watching.
But there is an argument that isn't actually new. I mean, I've said this before on the podcast. I've gone back to reading Tulloch's book on Doctor Who in the sort of 80s, and the way he describes, I'm going to pick a name out because he comes out in the book, Ian Levine is referenced, as and what he's doing there, Ian is talking about how wonderful John Nathan Turner's new era is, because this book came out about 82, 83.
Well, compared to the awful Graham Williams.
Yes, exactly, because the Graham Williams was too trivialized the history of Doctor Who. It was too comedy, it was too mainstream, it was too for everyone, it didn't understand Doctor Who. Now look at Legopolis really understands Doctor Who. It goes back to its roots with the Chameleon Circuit. It's got the Master, and I'm not knocking anything that Ian says there, because I love Legopolis. I think it's a brilliant story, but I think it's interesting that those same sort of territories between Davis and Moffat are slightly mirrored between Williams and Nathan Turner. So in a sense, I think you're right, Gareth. I think because of the internet and the communications we've got, it's far more prolific, far more in your face, and it is far more tangible and far more closely connected to the media, because the media, Den of Geek, will do the same thing. You know, it will be reporting in a similar fan sort of way, maybe not as territorial, but there is that sort of those sort of questions sort of rolling around there. But it was always there, certainly since the 70s.
Speaking,
it's a commoditization of it. You know, it's like, I see it with films. You know, a film is only worth what it takes in its opening weekend. It's not, is it any good? Did the audience like it? It's where it is relative to Avatar, or where it is relative to the Avengers. And I think Doctor Who has caught a bad case of that. I mean, let's be honest, you know, from a ratings perspective, that, you know, that season 18, early season 19 is a disaster. But certain sections of the fans loved it. You know, if you want to go back to Doctor Who being a popular program, it's Graham Williams, and they hated that.
So this is it's an interesting parallel, though, isn't it? I mean, Davis's ratings were very good, but it was very wide audience-based. Moffat does look very much more at Doctor Who. It is very much more interested in its legacy and its history, whether you like it or not. It is very, very self-involved, very self-reflexive to its continuity. And yet the ratings start to marginalise.
I'll tell you something I've noticed. I think there's someone who's had has become a father in the last 5 years, is that I find that the Russell T Davies era is more accessible to children than certainly the second half of the Moffat era.
Yeah, I can believe that.
There's something more about the approach that's more attractive and involving for
it's
children.
It's more accessible, full stop. I mean, I don't have the pub anymore, but obviously when I go out and about and I speak to people, the difference between when Russell was in charge and now, and I think however you dress it up, there's 2 million people not watching it anymore in this country, more or less. That seems to be what's disappeared. And Doctor Who has gone from a show that everyone talked about, because people knew I was a Doctor Who fan, they would talk to me about it. Oh, I saw that last week, that was good, or what do you think of that? Oh, I like that. No one talks about it anymore. It is just a thing that happens, but I detect that sort of lack of interest in the general media, actually. You know, the newspapers just review it. They don't run features. You used to see it not just on the Radio Times, but on what's on TV and all sorts of other things, because I think Russell constructed it. He understood the beats of a soap opera, because he's a huge soap fan. And I think he understood how to provide good copy and to construct things that people enjoyed. So people were invested in Rose's story or Donna's story or, you know, however. And I don't think we're well past that. So I
don't
get a feeling that that's the sort of area that Chris will be looking at.
You don't think it's a devil's advocate that there's serial apathy? You know, we have done 10 years of this now. It's not just people becoming, you know, institutionalized in our...
No, I don't think so. I think if that was going to happen, it would have happened after 5 or 8 years. Well, tens, there's nothing magic about the number 10, is there?
No one would give a monkey about Coronation Street in the media,
exactly,
or
EastEnders.
Say it's devil's advocate.
Yeah. Speaking of EastEnders, I don't know if you've noticed the popularly reported storyline about Stacey Slater and her baby.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Well, it's a good storyline. My sister's unit... in London, she works on a mother and baby unit. They've been involved in the on a factual basis.
Oh, I'm seeing a spin-off there. Mother baby unit.
Yeah. Sorry, what did you say, Gareth?
It's about postnatal depression. Isn't
it, is. Yeah. My sister looks after a unit, and my sister might be on TV talking about it in the next few weeks as well.
Famous family, these callies.
Oh, yes. When we're not killing kings, we're talking about babies. Yeah. Hey, look. What we haven't done, and I did allude to earlier in this week's podcast. Okay, which is actually our second podcast about this, because I did a little short podcast yesterday just to update the old Audio Boom page about it, about this topic, just say that we'd be talking about it. And that's kind of a 2-minute trailer. It was nice. And it was just me. It was lovely. And only joking. Chris Chibnall. Who is Chris Chibnall? You know, he's not just the guy who wrote The Power of Three and Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. He's not the guy who's just behind Broadchurch. He's got a vast and interesting career as a TV writer.
A very, very good theatre dramatist as well.
There you go.
A great track record in theatre. One of his plays, Kiss Me Like You Mean It, is very well thought of. And I think that's interesting, you know, because he's worked his way up through the theatre system, spent his early years, 3-4 years, working at the Royal Exchange in Manchester and a contact in Manchester, you know, and then moved down to the Royal Court. You know, this is a guy who has, you know, has real drama in his bones and is used to working with character and dialogue and not necessarily huge budgets. And that's, you know, that's where he's come from. That's his roots. So that excited me more than anything, actually. I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't watch Broadchurch. I'm aware of it. I know it's a phenomenon. I know people raved about it. The sort of people that Doctor Who is no longer reaching were raving about Broadchurch.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm excited. I think he's going to be a breath of fresh air.
Let's have a look at other items from his career. There's 42, which I don't think is a bad episode, actually, 42.
I think it's great. Yeah.
There's A Hungry Earth Called Blood, which I think went on too long. Should be one of those ones that should have been a single part rather than a two-parter, in my opinion.
It's by the design choices as well.
Yeah. Showrunner on ITV.
They've gone with Neil Gorton's original Silurian design.
Right.
It wouldn't have jarred. Go on.
Okay. He was showrunner on ITV's crime drama Law and Order UK, which is a surprise. Have you ever seen that? It's not bad at all.
It's got him out of Battlestar Galactica in it, isn't it?
Yeah, he did have for a
Jamie
bit.
Bamber.
Yeah. And The Chase host,
again, very
Bradley
popular,
Walsh.
Good quality, popular, reached the audience.
Yeah, I think Peter Davison's been in some of them as well, and Freema Agyeman's been in some of those as well. He was behind, or was strongly involved with the Arthurian drama Camelot for Channel 4. He was a producer and writer on Born and Bred, BBC One series from about 12 years ago or so. He was involved with the development of Merlin and was the only non-staff... It was the only writer who wasn't Matthew Graham or Ashley Farrow to write on both series of Life on Mars. He also, behind the one-off dramas, Great Train Robbery and United, about the Munich air disaster.
Which was very good.
Yeah. So, he's been getting some bad stick from a lot of fans.
Plus, he's the only boy on TV to take on Pip and Jane Baker.
Well, I know, we're laughing at that now, but that was like a big thing in the day, wasn't it? And to be honest with you, he was doing what a lot...
I could disagree with.
No, yeah. Exactly. He was saying what a lot of people were thinking. I didn't see it at the time, I don't think. But I was thinking those same things when I was watching Doctor Who at that time.
Well, someone on my Facebook page this week said that clip is going to be his version of a digital tattoo escape from.
Yeah.
And it's not without merit, that. But no, do you know the thing that most people seem to hold against him is that he was the lead writer. You can't call him showrunner. He was the lead writer on Torchwood,
yeah.
Series 1. And
yeah.
Yeah. And let's be honest, Torchwood was an impossible brief because it wasn't very well thought through. And let's be honest, the only person who could make Torchwood work is Russell. So he was on a hiding to nothing there because Russell, by his own admission, didn't have time, didn't give it the time it needed, the time it deserved. You know, back in the glory days when showrunners of Doctor Who could churn out 14 episodes a year, plus oversee 2 spin-off series and webisodes. The halcyon days. So I wouldn't, and looking back on Torchwood, I don't think it's that bad. I even quite like Cyberwoman. I think people make the mistake of thinking that Cyberwoman is a, you know, is a straight piece of drama. It's a loving B-movie piece of pastiche. It's a bit of fun.
Oh, it's very black, isn't it?
I loved it when I first saw it. And I never loved Torchwood, but I remember sitting watching that and finding the tension in it. And if you ignore the costume, which by Doctor Who standards you should be used to doing by now, it's actually quite a good little emotional Shivers piece. For the
costume. I don't think you can blame Shivers for the costume.
I think only problem...
Well, it's not like he broke into Millennium FX, is it? And built a costume overnight and said, "You are using this, or I've quit," is it? That didn't happen.
No, he broke into Millennium FX and pulled Pip and Jane Baker in there and said, "You're making this costume. This is for Terror of the Vervoids, and it better be good."
Terror of the Vervoids, their faces did have something seriously wrong with them, didn't they?
Not if you're in a frisky mood, they didn't.
Terror of the Vulva.
Yes. I think the only problem I have with Chris Chibnall is not in Chris Chibnall.
What could you say?
Well, I was going to say, I get the impression from what I've heard that the BBC is very keen post-Moffat not to reboot, but to try and clean slate and sort of move it and sort of get it into a better place than it perhaps is at the moment, where it's a bit everywhere. It's not sure who it's aimed at, and they want to straighten it out. You know, a new Doctor would obviously be the obvious sensible thing there as well. So I'm a little surprised they've brought someone, especially for a corporation which does, like a lot of corporations industries these days, spend a little too much time focusing on what fans say. I'm surprised they've pulled someone who's got prior association from the show. A bit like politics. You have a new wave of politics. You don't really want someone from your last cabinet, if you see what I mean.
Are you saying he's got form?
I'm saying people have perceived him with form.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though that's not fair.
Can we just recap on his Torchwood, right? He wrote Day One, Cyberwoman, Countryside, and End of Days from the first series.
Now, you've got to be a thumbnail sketch on all of them. I think Countryside is the one with the sort of...
That's one with Owen Teal.
Owen Teal. And End of Days is the one with...
the monster. The time traveler guy, wasn't that in End of Days as well? Played by...
Barry Melvin, the creepy antique dealer.
Yeah, yeah, and that was good. I think the problem with End of Days is the way it ended wasn't that convincing. Everything that led up to that was really intriguing.
No, I hated it.
Okay. Second series, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Adrift, Fragments, and Exit Wounds.
Okay, is this like a little quiz where we have to try and remember which one?
I think Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang, the first one.
The one with Spike, yeah.
Yeah, which I think Russell must have storylined.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So that's really a Russell. That's a Russell.
Yeah. Exit Wounds would seem to be the final episode.
I'd say.
Which is the kind of mass suicide.
Hello.
Hello, no, we're still here. Exit Wounds is that kind of mass suicide of... well, it's not really a mass suicide, is it? But it's the one where Owen and Toshiko go, even though Owen's already dead.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so he only wrote the first and the last in that series,
then? No, there's some more.
Oh, okay.
There's Adrift, which I'm just double-checking now. I think I know which one that is. This... is the one...
Is that the one with the lab on the island? It's her out with Gavin and Stacey is the mother, and he's the lad who's vanished at the age of 10 and has come back as a really scarred, unwell adult.
Yeah, she's got a son. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Shouldn't we
that's
say...
really good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
And, I enjoyed that.
And the final one, sorry, James, there's just one more, and that is Fragments, which, again, I can't quite recall. So I'm just going to double-check. Ooh. Fragments. This is
the
one.
Well on the quiz.
Yeah, this is the one where they find a guy.
Is that the elevator pitch for it?
Yeah, they find a guy.
Here is money.
It's the one that starts off in the Victorian era, and then there's some other stuff going on, and then they find
the Victorian Torchwood one.
Yeah, the Victorian Torchwood one. Yeah, that one.
And that was okay as well.
Yeah, that was
you
okay
know,
as
that
well.
Has
yeah,
spin-off potential all of its own. That's back when Torchwood was a new exciting thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, exactly. I think the problem is that we can go through all these and sort of say what we thought was okay, whether we're doing it to try and remind people that it's not all gloom and doom. There might be stuff that they didn't realise he did. But ultimately, the same way that you could say that Blink was considered one of the best Russell T Davies Doctor episodes by many fans, whether you do or not yourself, at the same time, doesn't really indicatively show how a Moffat-produced series would be. So,
I wouldn't disagree with
it
that.
It doesn't really.
I was just placing them into context because, you know, there's this kind of. There is a big kind of tantrum, as we've already said, that over Chris Chibnall, and maybe his credentials aren't up to scratch, perhaps. And I'm kind of putting it out there that actually, you know, anyone who's saying that is saying it without bothering to use the vast sum of human knowledge that's at the end of their fingertips.
Yeah. Someone would have popped up and gone mad, whoever got the job. You know, if Gatiss gets the job, I think half a fandom throws a tantrum. If Russell T Davies comes back, half a fandom throws a flip. If Toby Whithouse gets the job, I suspect that fandom is probably a bit happier, but there'll be someone who isn't happy. So whoever gets the job, someone, you know, probably about a quarter of fandom, their opening position is, I hate everything about you.
Yeah.
You see, I was having this conversation with a boss of mine just the other day, and we were talking about one of the inherent problems with Doctor Who at the moment, and that is that it still seems very, very... It still remains very traditional to Doctor Who. And we're talking about Doctor Who of the last 50 years. And I do think that could be one of its problems. And I think what I was kind of hoping with a new showrunner would be an indication of someone totally fresh, totally clean. Mm. I don't mean clean, that Chris was dirty, but someone who hasn't been part of the institution to be formalised by, or maybe not even a fan to be formalised by
it. Yeah.
And maybe get something fresh, because we are now over 10 years into New Who. So, you know, this is a new established Who. It's not like we really need to be focusing on this 50-year-old paradigm of the Doctor, TARDIS, one companion most of the time, with the same sort of relationship. You kind of feel that this is a time where, and he may do this yet, so I'm not saying for a second that he's just going to do the same thing that Stephen Moffat did or Davis did, that they did at the end of Troughton, where, you know, Troughton's ratings were not great at the end of it. And the movement into the 70s took them into trying to repositioning the show a little into a different framework, adapting a little bit of the Avengers feel to it and you know, reinventing it a little. And then eventually they went back to where they'd been before. And I just kind of hoping that they clean slate this and they do try and do something different. So I think the problem with the show is, no matter who's ahead of the line from Moffat, if they still go along the same line of contemporary companion Doctor as they sort of do at the moment, where he always has to be sort of fairly Tom Baker-ish, let's face it, there's no real deviation. Capaldi was trying to deviate from, but they were still giving him the inane prattle lines that started really with Tom Baker. They're not going to get something new to revitalize it. They need to step away from what they've been doing and try. Are you going to say that it needs to remain traditional, that formula?
No, I'm not going to say it all. You know what I'm going to say is it will invariably be different whoever turns up, because Stephen Moffat, right or wrong, love it or hate it, has a very, very, very particular style of dialogue. It's very sharp. It's very overwritten. It's, you know, both his doctors have a very consistent voice, in the same way, I suppose, that Russell's had a slightly consistent voice, you know, and that they use humour to diffuse things, but they were the lonely god, you know, there was a moroseness and a lonely quality. And, you know, the Doctor, for the last 6 years, has, for want of a better word, been a smart ass. You know, he's been the man who cannons into a room, you know, in the way that everyone... But, you know, you say about Tom Baker, everyone thinks Tom Baker did that, but he necessarily didn't all the time.
No,
so
he didn't all the time.
It's going to be different anyway.
I also think that the
Moffat era as a whole has generally failed with the companions. The companions have not been characters that the public have taken to their heart and been particularly interested in, nor have the fans written. And they've become almost like superhero spin-offs of their own. So Just by changing those two things, you have a brand new show before you get to any casting decisions, before you get to anything. So that's all he's got to do is bring a new tone to those things. We have a brand
Absolutely.
New show. The other thing I'd say, being devil's advocate again, and this is a problem for the show in a way, is that a lot of the guys who are now running TV drama across the board are Doctor Who fans. And they got into TV drama and became writers because they were Doctor Who fans. It's one of the great diasporas that Doctor Who fans have stealthily taken over TV drama over the past 15, 20 years and will continue to do so. So if you were looking for this fabled clean skin, a drama person but not a fan, there aren't that many out there.
I think there are those who are fans or admire it or watched it but aren't necessarily stringent to certain criteria. And to be fair to Stephen Moffat,
come on, Jess. You remember what it was like being a kid in the 80s when Doctor Who became a shitty niche thing that people took the mick out of you in school for. We were a little club, and I'm talking, it's our little club that's gone on to run most of TV drama.
Yeah, but
with their secret stashes of Target novels, and it's all right saying, you know, we're in the sort of Rufus Hound territory here when he says, oh, well, I never watched Doctor Who when I was a kid, but now it's back, I think it's great. Or people who pretend to be Doctor Who fans. But, you know, there aren't that many out there, unless you get Andrew Davis or someone like that.
Well, all I'm trying to say is, I would still say that, I'm not saying that he should be showrunner, but I'm saying that, say, Paul Cornell, for instance, would be a person, I would say, who was a big Doctor Who fan, but did find ways of subtle...
Who's written for fanzines and writes the comic strip. So
absolutely. What I'm saying is that he is someone who actually took it away from the Doctor Who norms. And that is what I'm saying is that it often seems to end up with Doctor Who fans who, and maybe I'm just focusing a lot on Stephen Moffat here, have got very stringent particulars of obeying a tradition of Doctor Who, which is ridiculous because Doctor Who doesn't have a tradition because it has changed a lot. And some very basic principles, the same principles that you've sort of suggested would be good if they manoeuvred around, don't get manoeuvred around because somehow it seems as if it would no longer be Doctor Who. I mean, that famous line of Terence Dick saying, you know, that really basically the companion is there just to sort of say, what is it, Doc? What is this Doctor? It's almost like a convention which has now become staple to Doctor Who, that if you have any more than one companion, it becomes a problem. We can just about stretch three. You know, Rory was a bit of a stretch, and that's it. And you think, well, does it have to be like that? I mean, UNIT wasn't like that. If you needs to get away from these very consistencies, which have been consistent through Moffat and Davis, you know, that there's a family
I would say in that you're completely missing what Russell brought to the party, which was Rose and Mickey. You know, I come back to the sophistication of something like the Girl in the Fireplace, or even The Rise of the Cybermen, where the relationship between the Doctor, Mickey, and Rose is very, very well thought through.
But I mean, there's two things
here. The year before, where you've got the Doctor, Rose, and Jack, you know, where that's simmering with sexual jealousy and tension and a sophistication in the relationships, which isn't hammered out and isn't necessarily sort of upskirt jokes in the TARDIS, but is sophisticated and adult and interesting and something that reaches beyond the core audience.
I would say that Davis did do it. Yes, I would say Davis did reinvent to a way. I wasn't really trying to poke at Davis, but I was saying that one of the things that Davis did do, which he didn't change particularly, and as I say, this isn't about Davis, is but by not changing it, it sort of continued to be established. And that is the sort of two-tier X-Files male, female lead, and everything else is sort of secondary. And that Moffat perpetuated that, and that still hasn't changed and seems to be even more rooted now than ever. And I'm just saying, I would hope that the next person would look to reinvent, and they wouldn't need to reinvent massively. I'm not saying they need to reinvent the show, but there's just certain things that after 10 years of New Who, which have now become established, and then there's the further legacy, which has remained as dogmatic at the moment, certainly in the last year, I felt. You still have to do things in the way that is traditional, that is right for Doctor Who.
Just to bring that back at you, I mean, I think it's a shame that Russell left when he did, because his final year in those specials, he's really experimenting. You know, Donna is experimental in that there's no you know, there's no relationship subtext. This is almost like, you know, a pair of fellow travellers. Wilf, you know, we have Wilf. I would have quite happily seen Wilf travel with the Doctor.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I think the family would have been great. And that's a complete departure in a way, you know, because they're there. What, the one thing I would say has changed is I think what Terence says is they're there to say what's going on, Doctor, and to be tied to the tracks. That's true of the 60s, 70s, and probably the 80s. I think what the thing that Russell brought to the table, which Stephen hasn't quite been able to do, he's tried, but he hasn't done it, is that extra element of morality where the companion's really there to question the Doctor's morality, to keep the Doctor in check. And that sense that he needs people, whether he thinks it or not. And, you know, I understand this. A Doctor who's a freelancer like myself. You know, when I sit at home in my office doing spreadsheets day after day after day on my own, you do begin to forget what other people are like and that you need them. So I think that fits the lonely God model. And I don't think we moved on to that. But I think we've got a blank piece of paper again. It's exciting.
Well, that's what I'm hoping we'll have. I mean, I suppose what I'm trying to say is I'm not saying that Davis did just do the same. What I'm trying to say is that the accumulation of everything from New Who and Old Who at the moment feels as if there's a very static model for the last 5 years.
It doesn't want to shift. It's an interchangeable contemporary girl with a twist.
Who is always perpetuated as a hero on the same level as the Doctor, which in fairness Davis advocated a lot in his early ones, and maybe some would argue even with Donna to a degree, but that never changed. And I think that's the problem, is there's a fear. I think my fear is that after Davis, I kind of hope that Moffat would do something that felt radically different, not because Davis's stuff didn't work, but because you wanted to feel a fresh new take.
Yeah.
And it never felt fresh. You could feel Moffat in there, you could feel his touch in there, which isn't always a bad thing, but it didn't change. You still felt it was going through, it was still stuck in that same structure, and it wasn't shifting, it wasn't moving. And I suppose I'm fearing now with Moffat leaving that structure is going to become even more fixed, because there's going to be a more, sometimes shows go more into themselves when they get scared of ratings and the like, and try and do what's been done before but better, rather than sort of going, let's take a risk, let's do UNIT, or not saying they should do UNIT, but, you know, let's take a risk here and change the goalposts a bit. The companion doesn't have to be like the Doctor. The companion doesn't have to be on par with the Doctor. The companion, you know, I mean, I know what you mean about the lonely model. I mean, you could say that was a Cornell invention, which Davis adapted.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. I think, I mean, let's not forget, you know, Russell has 16 years of pre-production through The New Adventures, which he's an avid reader of and a huge fan of and indeed contributor to. So, he has that pre-production. And ultimately, he does make the selections. But you're right. Yeah, people like Cornell are they're all part of shaping that era.
I'm just hoping that Chibnall, I suppose, as I say, because Chibnall's been part of these previous eras, I was hoping to have someone fresh in the way that Cornell excited me, the way that Davis did excite me. And after Moffat, who I thought would excite me, and I didn't, personally speaking, I know a lot of people are totally different agreement, didn't live up to what I thought his potential would bring. It never really changed much, and we had this constant, story arcs, end of season explosive finales. Then it became so inward, and suddenly all of Doctor Who was being altered and shifted to fit this new world that he was creating. I think that's a scary thing, and maybe this is why fans are reacting badly. Maybe there's this, after so much experience, they are nervous. They are not sure what to expect, and they're worried they're going to expect something.
They're on nerves. Do you know what I think has to change?
What's that?
I think it's time that Uncle Murray Gold shown the door. I mean, he's done some nice work, but he's in such a sort of tonal comfort zone with it.
Yes. That's a polite way of saying he's phoning it in, isn't it?
His soundtracks. I mean, he has done some extraordinary work, but most of his extraordinary work for me is in the past.
Yeah,
and I think just as Dudley, dear old Dudley Simpson, was definitely, you know, in his comfort zone by the time he was shown the door in, you know, after the mighty horns of Nymon. I think we're now at a point where I think it would be good for us to have someone new doing the music.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Listen, we've been talking at length about this. We need to just remind ourselves that we've got like 2 years before we're going to see anything new. And in that 2 years, we've got a good at least 18 months of the Radio Times website and other sites polling us as to what our favourite Stephen Moffat episodes were.
Yeah, okay.
They've already started. So I don't know if you want to look forward to that or just leave the planet for a couple of years.
I mean, that is just exactly perpetuates the whole football scenario, isn't
yeah,
it? It's
yeah,
just
yeah,
when the
yeah.
media keeps doing it, which is your favourite Moffat era and which is your favourite, and it creates that. We've got class this year, though.
No, we haven't.
Haven't we? I thought we had that later.
Well, it's going to be on TV this year, but we haven't got class this year. We're not talking about that.
I don't know enough about it either way. Is it just the Adventures of Coal Hill School Kids?
So we're told, yeah. So there isn't that much has been revealed about it, really, other than who's behind it and who's involved with writing a couple of episodes.
I'm sure it'll be fine, but I doubt it's being made for me.
No, exactly.
Unless they do a thrilling late 1970s spin-off, which is like Grange Hill, 70s Grange Hill versus aliens.
Now Grange Hill versus Nymon.
Yeah.
Rollo versus Nymon.
Roland and gang versus the Scovop Splitzer. Yeah, I'm great with that. Someone write that down. Please, someone make that. Or can we just have one spin-off episode where it's in the 70s? I'm there.
Do you feel all right? I mean, because obviously, I suppose one final point we should sort of make is the conversation about Capaldi, that there's a very likelihood that if at the end of, as we said, the end of Moffat's era, that Capaldi will probably bow out as well. Do you feel bad about that? Do you think that's a good time for him to go? I know Brian would say that he'd like to have seen Moffat written by the next showrunner for at least a series. Well,
Capaldi written by the next showrunner, not Moffat.
Yeah.
Moffat being written by the showrunner.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
That would be really weird. It would be very interesting, wouldn't it? But I would agree with Brian, yeah, totally. I mean, Tom Baker's really the only modern... He's not modern, what am I talking about? He's really the only Doctor that develops with having these four showrunners.
Yeah.
You know, there was different showrunners for the first two Doctors, but they were very much sticking to the show template. So,
yeah,
they weren't really bringing that much new in, although obviously the Monster era was spearheaded by one of them. On the whole, it wasn't... That's what we think of when we think of Charlton, don't we, the Monster era. So, I would like it, and I think it's a shame that he's going to go. And I think it's just... Did we talk about this last week? I feel so sorry for him not having
I think you have to change. I think you have to change when you change showrunner. Otherwise, if there isn't a tonal shift in the dialogue and everything else, there's almost no point changing showrunner. And if you've got a Doctor that suddenly...
Or changing Doctor.
Yeah, I think you might as well shift Doctor. And I think... Is it hard on Capaldi? I think you'd have to ask him, you know, whether he feels he could have done better with someone else. And we know the answer is going to be, you know, he's not going to say that either way.
He's not
going to say
it, no, of course not.
No. I think it's been a good experiment having an older Doctor, but I'm not... I also have a horrible feeling that that's where the 2 million viewers have vanished.
I say that as well, and people don't like it when I say it, so I'm glad you do.
Well, the reason I say this is I think he's a great actor.
Yeah.
But the problem is that the show for the 8-9 years when he was cast had coalesced around this idea of a more romantic lead, a younger lead, and with the best will in the world. When you suddenly take that element of the character away,
exactly.
It's not unfeasible that section of the audience maybe is less inclined to watch it. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a bit disingenuous there, but I think that is part of it.
I think there's a reason that
Tennant is still the gold standard. That out of three doctors, yeah, I guess he's the most attractive and the sexiest.
Well, it's
and
like
has a certain swagger and sex appeal, and played the character exactly that way.
It's like James Bond. You know, James Bond. Never Say Never Again is never really, apart from it not being canon, is never really considered on the same level of his earlier films because he's an older James Bond. You know, James Bond is quintessentially for young people his 30s to 40s. As soon as you shift from that.
Yeah.
And to be fair, as I've said before, I mean, Doctor Who technically has usually been 30s and 40s. It's not often he's been that old. It is a sort of public, it's like a pop culture memory that he's really this old guy who has been young in the last 10 years. And, you know, Tom Baker.
Well, how old? Yeah, Tom Baker was an old Pertwee, actually, if you look back now, it's pretty youthful.
Yeah.
Tom Baker was 40, Pertwee was 50, Troughton was in his 40s.
Sylvester was in his 40s.
McGann was 39, I think, or something like that, 36, 37, late 30s, anyway. Yeah. Eccleston was just over 40. Tennant was 34.
Yeah.
Matt Smith was obviously 12. And Peter Davison was 26 when cast. And Colin Baker was about 39, 40 when cast, wasn't he?
So again, you know, the medium is not an old.
We've had three doctors over 50.
But I mean, the difference is, as Gareth under 30. Pointed out, the doctor is now has been considered a sort of more romantic hero than. Yeah. Than prior, which started with McGann, to be fair. So, there is that factor. But yeah, he's not an old guy. And it's a shame in a sense, because you can see where they've tried to sort of create that tension as they did with Smith and the other way around in this last series at the beginning, where they let his hair grow out, more youthful clothes, the sunglasses, the rock guitar. So this tension that he's an older looking guy, but hey, he's pretty youthful in the way that Smith was the other way around. But I just don't think it works. I mean, as I've said before, you know, my mother preferred Matt Smith to Capaldi because she likes a bit of eye candy, you know, as people do. And it's not young girls. This is, you know, people across age groups. I think that's the danger when people start to try and demean an issue and say, yeah, well, it's just young girls. You think, well, if we had a 6-70, do you think we're going to have a 70-year-old female companion? No. A 55-year-old one? No. Not that as well. I wonder why. And yet that's acceptable. The girl can stay young for the men, but the guy can't, the doctor can't stay young for the ladies. And.
Riversong!
Must we?
No. listen, guys, we've been talking at length for a good hour on this particular topic. So I would like to wrap things up. We are clearly going to be coming back to this topic over the next. Well. We're kind of stuck with it, really, I suppose, aren't we? we're stuck with it. This is it now, isn't it? This is the shape of future podcasts and future discussions for Doctor Who fans online, is the whole Chibnall thing and Moffat thing and where Moffat went wrong, where Moffat went right, where Chibnall can fix things, where he might not, that sort of thing. That's the shape. It's now formulated. It's cast in iron. It is a fact. Gareth, as a temporary occasional member of the podcast team, we were talking a couple of weeks ago about the stuff that we're looking forward to in 2016. So just to finish off the podcast, what are you looking forward to this year in on TV and maybe in cinema?
Oh, gosh.
Not in book form.
No, not. to be honest, I'm a box set man now, and I hate to say this, but all of the things I'm looking forward to are American shows. You know, The Walking Dead. I'm looking forward to Gotham coming back. I'm looking forward to, you know, all those sort of shows that have me now, mm-hmm. that have me by the short and curlies. If we were talking British TV, I'm looking forward to. I think that's a bit
Musketeers?
Trickier now.
Did you watch Musketeers
or Ripper Street?
No, neither really. They don't grab me.
What about the Channel 4 Android thing?
Oh, do you know, I've got that recorded on my TiVo, but I haven't got round to watching it yet.
Oh, you should watch that. It's good. Yeah, it's good.
Is it good to say?
It is good.
So the things I'm looking forward to, and it saddens me, are all American. You know, Game of Thrones. Although they do have a you know, a huge amount of British talent in there. So, you know, I feel less guilty consuming them on that basis. Yeah. But
I'm looking forward to Game of Thrones as well.
It's a problem. It's a problem, you know.
Yeah.
British TV seems to have gone from being in the vanguard of everything that's excellent and edgy and exciting to being now, you know, it seems to have gone very provincial and playing it safe and is locked into a format that isn't going to work, that isn't necessarily going to work in this new streaming, binge watching, you know, high quality, well written, well structured stuff. I don't think we've got anything that is on the same level at the moment. And I don't know where
Ripper Street. Absolutely superb.
It looked good. I remember it looking good. But
have you not seen any of it?
I watched the first couple in the first series, and I thought it's okay, but it just seemed to be full of Game of Thrones blokes in, you know, in tweed.
It's certainly developed a bit since then, and obviously it is exactly what you've just been describing these days. It is a show that's available online to watch in bulk, should you wish to. It's produced by Amazon, so.
Well, did you enjoy
the things I should be watching?
Well, I would say Ripper Street is a very high quality show. If it's not your thing, that's fine. We can just edit out everything you've said in this podcast and we'll all be happy. it is a good show. I like it. I think the 2 hour opener. Did you see that last
week? Haven't
watched
it yet. I've discovered that my internet isn't friendly with Amazon when it comes to downloading and streaming 2 hour pilot. So I'm moving back to Virgin next week.
Ooh, ouch. Well, yes, I've watched that and I'm on to the second episode.
Okay.
I will say no more.
No, we'll talk about it in a couple of weeks.
We'll talk about it in a couple of weeks. Musketeers, I still think is fun fodder in the same way that Doctor Who's fun fodder, and so was Life on Mars. It's light drama. I enjoy it. So looking forward to that.
Life on Mars had a little bit more under the hood.
Yes, yeah, totally, yes. That's fair enough. Musketeers. Gotham season 2, I'm not sure. I mean, I've seen you talk about your praise for Gotham, Gareth, on Facebook, and yes. I have issues with it still. I'm not sure if I can bring myself to season 2. We will see. I think
it's the Penguin show.
Penguin is brilliant in it. It just sometimes feels it's trying too hard, harder than it should be trying. But
I watched Batman Returns a few days ago.
So you did.
And it's dreadful. I mean, it's very stylish, but the way that they do, you know, I mean, the Penguin never becomes more than a Tim Burton sketch on a serviette.
No,
what they do
is
much, much better.
Oh, just, no doubt, but I still quite like that trailer.
in Gotham City, has risen. it is dreadful.
Just trying to think, there's a load of good things this year.
Well, there's the X-Files starting in a couple of days, isn't there, as well?
Well, the X-Files to watch, yeah. See how
it has already started by the time the podcast is listened to by our listener, who we have got to basically bring the sad news to, that it is the end of this week's podcast with a K.
Oh, God, are they turning the generator off on you?
Something
people
like
to get
that,
inside
yeah.
before the dragon swoop.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we're on a time limit for Audio Boom, you see, and it means a lot of heavy editing if we go over 18 minutes.
Sorry, I am worried that, you know, that good quality, genre-friendly British drama is an endangered species.
No,
I think
well, you know, this might be why companies like Red Planet run competitions. Because they've identified the same problem, so and then we've got the whole Amazon and Netflix thing going on as well. Although they do seem to be focusing mostly on American properties and, you know, comic books and revamping series that have collapsed and what have from the past, like, and things
well,
like that.
Hopefully, once Doctorate's done, I'll be able to let you know what the situation is in 3 years' time.
Yes, that would be good, wouldn't it? So, we'll be back, some configuration of some of us or all of us. We'll be back next week. Until then, it's 9-1 from us. I mean, goodbye.